Welcome to Pantano Christian Church. This is the weekend of August 26th and 27th, 2006. This sermon series is called Solomon on Sex, a study of Song of Songs. Join us now as Pastor Glenn Elliott presents the final sermon of this series entitled The Honeymoon's Over. And now, here's Pastor Glenn.
Good morning. We're in a series on sex. If you've not been here the last 2 weeks, you wouldn't know that, so be prepared. We're looking at the Song of Songs, Solomon on Sex. And if you missed any of the last two messages, you can get those online now. You can listen to them right on your computer. You can download them into your computer or get the CD, and encourage you to be caught up on that. You know, you just saw Mark and Lynette, and they weren't acting. That's their real life. Here's a couple that's been married for 30 years who has just been just faithful to each other and kept their love alive. Yeah, let's give them a hand. You know, I want to honor some other relationships, some long-term relationships. I know Dave asked the teachers to stand, and now I'm going to ask some couples to stand. And if you're visiting, we don't make people stand all the time. It just happened to happen that way this morning. But if you've been married 25 years or longer, would you just stand for a few minutes? I want to see the couples. Wow, look at this. Stay standing. Look at that. All in the courts. Stay standing. Yes. Stay standing, stay standing. Now, how many have been married more than 35 or more? Keep standing. The rest of you can sit down. 35. Look at this. Yes. All right. How about 45 or longer? Anybody 45? Got a few still standing. Yes. Good. How about 50 or more? Anybody got 50 or more? Yes, got a couple. All right, thank you. Be seated, thank you. Boy, do they have some stories they could tell us. Do you know that we have a couple in our church, Dale and Elda, who are active members here, who have been married 69 years. Wow, that blows me away. You know, yesterday was Pastor Tim's birthday, 67 years old. They've been married longer than Pastor Tim's been alive. It's amazing. By the way, on October 8th, I think that's a Sunday, we're going to have just a special celebration for those who've had long marriages. So just be watching your bulletin for the more information coming up on that. What we're talking about this morning is how we can help marriages not only last a long time, but to thrive a long time. And that's what we're going to be looking at all through this. You know, last week we talked about the honeymoon, and I want to go back and revisit the honeymoon, because today we're talking about what happens after the honeymoon. Do you ever wonder where the word honeymoon comes from? It's obviously a combination of two words, honey and moon. All right, honey's the easy one. Honey's sweet. You know, all our teenagers go, oh, sweet, you know, to kind of get the idea. Moon ranks reference to something we're not really in touch with, but most of human history has functioned on a lunar calendar. In fact, Jewish religions and Islamic religions continue to function on a lunar calendar, which is about 30 days. And so what you've got, obviously, is a sweet month. Honey, moon. Okay? Now, the reality is that didn't last very long. Anybody notice the moon last night? About 8 o'clock, I watched it almost ready to set over there. Just a sliver. You know, it won't be long till it'll be full. And have you ever noticed how fast a full moon fades? Months go by, they just fly by. And that's the whole idea with the honeymoon. A honeymoon, a sweet month, doesn't last very long. It passes. They just don't last. And every marriage, unless you're lying, every marriage experiences conflict and disillusionment at some level. Some obviously more horrific than others, some more difficult, but every relationship at some point will experience conflict and disillusionment. It's inevitable. It's also natural. It's not something that we wish away or could even dream that would never exist. It's just a part of life. And I want to share with you just a little model that's been really helpful for me in our marriage. I use it with other couples, pre-marriage and marriage. And actually, this model fits any human relationship. A life group, a small group that you're in, a working group. New classes are forming all over Tucson right now. And those new groups, wherever they're human relationships, they follow this pattern. That's why I call it the life cycle of relationships. And each phase can last a long time. It can last a very short time, depending on circumstances. And so, obviously, the first part of the relationship is the honeymoon. That's what we looked at last week in Song of Songs. In the honeymoon, everything is wonderful. He or she is great. Everything I dreamed of. Oh, wow. It's just this incredible, ecstatic experience with this person. And it just seems like nothing could go wrong. And then conflict happens. It's inevitable. It can start small. It can start off huge. And by the way, some honeymoons last 3 seconds. Some can last for years. But inevitably, there's going to be the conflict. And conflict creates more conflict, usually. We get into a spiral of conflict. Because once you get into conflict, you start noticing other things. And you start digging up the stuff. And all of a sudden, you start going down the slope. And that can just plummet. Boom! Or it can take a long time as it goes. See, what happens here, and let me just use the wife as an example. The wife realized that her Prince Charming isn't who she thought he was. In fact, she realized she's married none other than Homer Simpson. Or if you're a little older, Al Bundy. Or if you're a little older, Archie Bunker. Or if you're really old, one of those 50-year marriages, Ralph Cramden from The Honeymooners. All in one. Oh, no. The conflict continues, and here's the reality. We can't live in continual conflict. We can't live in unresolved conflict. And so as it continues, something has to happen. Something's got to change. And we come to a point of decision. At the bottom of that slide, we got to say, look, something's got to change. And there's basically two ways we respond. First is to separate. I've had it. It's not worth it. I'm walking away. In a marriage relationship, it can be divorce. If it were in a work relationship, it can be resigning and quitting your job. It can be any number of things. Or we can choose another route. And that's the route of commitment or recommitment. It's not an easy route. But what happens at this stage is the couple says, you know what? We can't live this way. We have to figure out our stuff that's contributing to the problems, each of us, and how we're going to work through this. Notice in this graph that it's not a straight line. That's still bumpy. No relationship is without its challenges all through it. But you know what? It's not quite as dramatic. The ups and downs aren't quite as high. And also notice, it never goes back to the level at the top of the honeymoon. Because that was unrealistic. That person was perfect. And now that person obviously is not perfect. And I'm not perfect. And so that's why it never goes back there. See, that's one of the problems. One of the reasons why people choose to separate is they realize they will never get back to the honeymoon. But that's unrealistic. What's realistic is that commitment level where it's not quite as high, but it's not as low. And you figure out the ways, the systems, the means of working through the problems. And that's what we're going to be looking at. Now, when you look at that model, it can actually be pretty discouraging. You think, well, how is that going to help me? What you're saying is that we're doomed for conflict. Yeah, that's exactly what we're saying. But what happens is when you realize that's the pattern, then we disarm the power of the disillusionment and the conflict. You see, what happens and why so many marriages end in the early years of marriages is that when they go through from the fall of the honeymoon to the conflict, they think, oh man, it's gone. And never to return. And so there's this powerful disillusionment, which really leads to destruction of the relationship. And if we understand that that's actually quite normal and inevitable, then we know that we're not surprised by it. We're not caught off guard. We're prepared for it. And even further, we know that there are some options Not, maybe not easy options, but there are some options. One of the greatest secrets of life is this. We can't avoid conflict, and nor should we. In marriage, in family, at work, in our neighborhood, wherever it might be, in our classrooms, in school, conflict is inevitable. We can't avoid it, but we can choose to resolve conflict. And we're free to do that. That's one of the powerful secrets of life. Folks that live messed up lives are constantly trying to avoid conflict and haven't learned the tools, the skills of dealing in a healthy way with conflict. And so we've got to do that. Now, let me just tell one of our stories. I first met my wife in 1970. I was high school, and she was a lowly middle school girl. She somehow determined that I was the one, clear back then, but I wasn't interested. So it took us a long time. We knew each other for 9 years. She kept pursuing me, and I kept sort of ignoring her. But finally in 1979, we got engaged. And what you see there is a picture of our engagement. Not the couple on the left, the couple in the middle. I guess I better clarify that. My wife is on a retreat this weekend, so I am free to say whatever I want. Well, anyways, this picture is the I finally got him picture. And if you look really careful at the picture, look at her smirk. She's going, I got him. And then notice she prominently displays the engagement ring, you know, there. We were engaged in 1979 in the spring, and just like I talked about the first week of the series, we had a short engagement. We were married in November of the same year. And our first 4 years of marriage were awful. They were awful. They were awfully painful. My wife was in constant tear mode for 4 years. You see, we married each other with all of our maturities and immaturities. You get it? There was a lot about my wife and a lot about me that we were wise and mature beyond our age, and yet there was a lot of immaturity there at the same time, all mixed in there. For me, I was a driven young man. I, at the time, was working in college administration in California. And I learned really quickly that the harder I worked, the more recognition I got. Now, in Christian colleges, you don't get paid more. You just get affirmation. And once in a while, they give you a new title. And once in a while, they give you a new desk. But you never get a raise. You just, you know. But you get lots of affirmation. And so, it's really simple how it works. Work hard, get recognized. Work harder, get more recognition. And all of a sudden, you're into an addiction. And you keep working more and more. And all of a sudden, I was sometimes, especially the beginning of semesters, working 7 days a week. Going in early, coming home late. And she's sitting home crying. What's the deal? She took it personally. She said, he's rejected me. And she's crying. And then I come home and she's crying, and that doesn't set well with me. And then we're in the spiral. We're in the spiral. But you know, when Jolene and I married, with absolute intentionality, we said to God and to each other, divorce was not an option. Now, I know when I say that, sometimes people say, that's so unrealistic. You don't know my situation. And listen, I deal with folks all the time. I do know reality of life. But for us, that was a sincere commitment to God and to each other. There was no escape hatch. There was no back door. And because we made that commitment, and in the midst of our misery, something has to change. And if we can't separate, then guess what the only other option is? We got to fix this. But I didn't know how to fix it. I didn't really fully understand the problem. And then a good friend of mine, his name is Dick Alexander. We are in California at the time. He took me out to a Chinese food restaurant. I remember exactly the place. We sat down, we ordered, and this is exactly how it went. As soon as the order was done, he looks at me in the eyes and he says, "Glenn, you love your work more than you love your wife." I don't remember anything else of the conversation. But as soon as he said those words, I knew he was right. I didn't feel the need to defend myself. I knew he was right. We finished our lunch. He left, and I'm standing outside this restaurant thinking, how do I fix this? I knew that it wasn't as simple as saying, I got to go home at 5 o'clock. I knew there was something in me that needed to be fixed. And it took me, that really was the beginning of a 3-year project where I began to discover that my significance was based on recognition of others. That's a huge deal. Because see, if your significance is based on the recognition of others, you're going to keep going back for the recognition. But to have to change the whole thing inside that says, no, I'm significant because of Jesus. Wow. At the same time, Jolene had some really good friends. And they told her, quit crying. He's an idiot. He's not worth crying over. Now, they actually said it probably a little nicer, but they said, look, this isn't your fault. That's his problem. It's not that you're a bad person. He's got to deal with that. And you know what? At the time, I didn't like those friends very much. But today, I cherish them. They spoke the truth. And Jolene began to get healthier. She began to be able to separate my behaviors from her feelings. And see, we both began to work on the relationship. And I'll tell you this, while the first 4 years were horrible, the last 22 have been incredible. Each year they get better. Yeah. Thank you. And for those of you who are young, not married, or maybe soon to get married, or single, thinking about marriage, I tell you, it is possible that over a long time your marriage can get better and better, not worse. It is possible. Even though we may not have tons of examples of that, it's very real. All right, so tell Jolene whatever you want when she gets back. Let's go to Song of Songs. Last week, we looked at chapter 4. In the very beginning of chapter 5, we looked at the honeymoon last week, and that was pretty fun. And the honeymoon is over. They consummated their marriage. If you don't know what that word is, look it up. And that was chapter 5, verse 1. But you know what? In 5:1, they consummate their marriage. They have sex. And then I don't know what the time frame is between verse 1 and verse 2. It's probably a few days, maybe a month, who knows. But quickly in the story, it goes from honeymoon to conflict. Let's take a look at it. The wife first says, I slept, but my heart was awake. You ever had that experience? A pretty restless night? Listen, my lover is knocking, she says. And then she reports him saying, open to me, my sister, my darling, my dove, my flawless one. If you weren't here last week, he's still wooing her. He's got it down. He knows how to woo her. He says, oh, you're flawless. You're my dove. My head is drenched with dew, my hair with the dampness of the night. And you go, what's all that about? He didn't dry his hair? No, he'd been working all night. He'd been working all night. He's thinking of his voluptuous beauty. He comes home late and expects sex. So he's knocking on the door. Now, the problem is she doesn't respond exactly the way he hoped she would. There's a little bit of a delay, a little bit of a hesitancy. And she says, I've taken off my robe. Do I have to put it on again? I've washed my feet. Must I soil them again? You want me to do what? That's what she says. Now, in today's language, here's what's happening. He's begging. Come on, it's been a long, hard day. Open up. And she's saying, are you kidding? Get a life. Not tonight. I got a headache. All you think about is sex. How dare you come home so late and expect sex? Come in at an earlier now and then we'll talk. Okay, that's my paraphrase of what we just read. Then the story continues. She says, "My lover thrust his hand through the latch opening. My heart began to pound for him. I arose to open for my lover. My hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with flowing myrrh on the handles of the lock." See, now she has a change of heart. She was hesitant at first. She delayed. And then she decides, I'm going to respond to him. Notice in this whole series so far that he didn't force himself on her. He's very sensitive. He continues to woo her. He continues to honor her and respect her. He does want to have sex, but he's not doing it in a gross way at all. And what happens here is that they both felt wronged. He came wanting to have sex and was put off by her hesitancy. She's put off because it's late and he's not sensitive to her. She's tired. She's already ready for bed. She doesn't want to get out of bed. And so they're wronged to each other. And what happens is it starts that cycle. Most conflict begins at a really mild level, and then it gets deeper and deeper. We start looking for things to throw at each other. We look for garbage to throw. You know, well, you hurt me, so I'm going to throw this. Well, you hurt me, I'm going to throw this. And the thing begins to spiral. But she changes her mind. She says, you know what? I'm going to open the door. I'm going to connect with him. But what happens in this story is that now the conflict already creates distancing. Because see, what happens is she goes to the door. Let's see what happens. Oh, I want to talk about distancing first. There's a lot of ways that we can distance when we're in conflict. And a few years ago, I did a message where I talked about the turtle and the skunk. What happens when a turtle senses danger? They pull in their shell. And sometimes when conflict goes on, and if you're the turtle personality, you just want to withdraw. You just pull with inside, which drives the skunk crazy because the skunk wants a good fight. What does a skunk do when a skunk senses danger? Lifts up his tail and sprays. And if you got a skunk and a turtle in the house, you know, that's really frustrating to the skunk. If you got two skunks, it stinks like crazy. If you got two turtles, they just both hibernate and nothing ever gets talked about. Those are some of the ways that we distance. Ignoring each other. It's amazing how in homes, a husband and wife can live in the same home and ignore each other. Withholding sex. We talked about that last week. And we find lots of ways to punish each other. I'm going to get back at him. I'm going to get back at her. I'll do this. I'll do that. I won't do this. I won't do that. And we distance each other. But remember this. We are always free to choose our response to conflict. The turtle doesn't have to withdraw. The skunk doesn't have to spray. We can choose, instead of distancing ourselves, we can choose to connect. And that's exactly what she does. She chooses to connect. She says, "I opened for my lover. But my lover had left. He was gone. My heart sank at his departure. I looked for him, but did not find him. I called out, but he didn't answer." So what she does is she can't find him in the house. So now she goes out into the city. And my guess is she probably didn't dress completely. You know, she was kind of panicked now. She knew she'd offended her husband. And she goes out chasing after him. "And the watchman found me," she says. "As they made their rounds in the city, they beat me, they bruised me, they took away my cloak, those watchmen of the walls." I think what happened is they mistook her for a prostitute, wandering around late at night, scantily dressed probably. Wow. And then she says to her friends, which she always calls, "O daughters of Jerusalem," she says, "O daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you, if you find my lover, what will you tell him? Tell him that I am faint with love." And then she says to her friends, "You gotta help me. Help me find my lover. And when you find him, tell him I really want to reconnect. Tell him that I love him." She makes a really good choice. There's a couple realities here. The first reality is this. When we're in the midst of conflict and we decide we want to do what's right, it isn't always easy. Sometimes the other person's not willing. And then sometimes there are circumstances, in this case a very powerful circumstance, that seems to get in the way of the reconciliation and the healing. We need to be prepared in the midst of conflict that just because I decide to do something good to make this relationship turn around doesn't mean it's going to happen easily. And that's when so many people give up. Conflict, attempt, the attempt is thwarted, so I'm done. I'm done. And that's not the way it is. We can't be done too quickly. That's why Jesus talked to his disciples about how many times do we forgive? 70 times 7? You got a long road to go here. And then the friends of her respond back. How is your beloved, how is your husband better than others? Most beautiful of women. Can you hear the tone? See, she got to marry the king. She's in the palace. And now, which is just human nature, unfortunately, they're kind of liking the fact that things are going sour. I think they were jealous. What's so good about him? You who think you're so special. How is your beloved better than others that you can charge us to go find him and tell him that you love him? You created your bed, you sleep in it. It's kind of what they're saying. Second reality is that in the midst of conflict, we are so tempted to question and doubt the one we love. It can come from external sources, but it can come from internal as well. Maybe he's not as good as I thought he was. Maybe he's not worth it. Maybe she's not worth it. Powerful temptation. You see, they're at a point of decision. Are they going to recommit and work through the conflict? Or are they just going to let it continue and separate? Well, she makes a really good decision. She decides to honor him and to recommit to him. And we see that in chapter 5, verses 10 through 16. I'm not going to read all those verses. I just want to read a couple of them. Notice what she says in response to what her friends have said and in response to all that's gone on. My lover is radiant and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000. Ruddy means he's got this great complexion, blue eyes, you know, he's a hunk. That's ancient Oriental language for he's a hunk. He is incredible. He stands above all the others. And then she continues to recount how wonderful she is. And then at the end she says, this is my lover. This is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. He's my man. I am committed to him. She publicly, to her friends, recommits herself to her husband. That's powerful. She's almost got an attitude against their attitude saying, he's it. He's the man. He's outstanding. And then he chooses a really good response as well. In chapter 6, he does this incredible thing. He verbally reaffirms and recommits to her. What he does is really powerful. In chapter 4, last week we talked about how what a great wooing person he was in their honeymoon. And he just totally blesses her with these incredible verbal affirmations. And now when they reconnect, he uses the exact same language he uses on the honeymoon. And what he's saying is, you know what? The things I said to you before we were experienced this conflict, I am reaffirming to you. I still love you. I am still committed to you. I still honor you. Wow. That's really powerful. Now, when we think about this life cycle of relationships and the inevitability of conflict and the fact that, you know, the relationship can never be like it was at the honeymoon stage, then we have an honest question. Does that mean that romance is inevitably going to fade and that the sizzle's going to die in a relationship? Well, I want to answer that this way. The relationship will be different, but it doesn't mean the romance and the sizzle has to completely die. In our skit, you saw with Mark and Lynette, that after 30 years, their relationship has changed. They have 30 years of history and stories and experiences. And so it's not bad, it's not worse, it's just simply different. You see, a lot of things happen in our lives that change over the course of a relationship. And there are so many things that can come into our lives that can damage that sizzle and that romance that still needs to be a part of life. One of the things that happens is we get distracted. Kids come along, and all of the events of our kids, work, hobbies, television. There's so many things that can distract us. And then there's just plain laziness and sometimes tiredness. Some of those things we can control, some of them we can't. There's natural changes. We age. You heard their concerns about their aging bodies. And sometimes just our abilities change over time. And then there's always the issues of selfishness. That can take away the sizzle and the romance. We get into ruts. After we live together for a while, we can get into a pattern that just becomes really unhealthy. Now, some of these things we have control over, some of them we don't. We don't have control over the aging, but we do have control over the selfishness, the ruts, the laziness. So we can address some of these things, but some of these things we have to learn to live with. Now, I want to just speak specifically to the men right now. And I want to speak to you in terms of the men taking an initiating role in deepening the intimacy in the relationship over a lifetime. The reason I'm talking to the men is two reasons. One is most gals get this and want to work at it. If they've quit, it's just because they've been rebuffed for too many times. But if their husband would initiate some things, man, they'd be right there. That's generally true. Not always, but generally. The other reason I want to address the men first is this. The Bible says this interesting statement that we don't understand in our modern culture very well. The Bible says that the man is the head of the wife. Ooh. And usually we hear that as the man is the boss of the wife, and the wife goes, no way, and the husband says, no way, and it's too complicated. Doesn't mean boss. What that word means and the whole meaning in the context. No, by the way, nowhere in Scripture does it ever call anybody to be the boss of somebody, to be controlling and manipulating and greedy and selfish. All those connotations are not in the Scripture. What it means is this. God has asked the husband to initiate, to get started the good things for a family. Not only the husband, but if the husband will initiate good spiritual things, things that are emotionally healthy, that are good for the family benefits tremendously. God knew that. And then God said in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25, says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Wow. Think about that. Jesus, we are the church. We are His people. Jesus initiated the relationship with us. He came to us. Jesus initiated everything good for us, whether we respond to Him or not. He sacrificed everything for us. He sought the best for us. And here's the thing that's really cool about Jesus. Has His love any less today for us than it was yesterday? Or the day before? No! He maintains His love and consistently all through our lives, regardless of what we do. We're to love our wives in that way. So guys, one of the ways to continue to develop the relationship, to keep some sizzle there, to keep some romance, to keep the relationship intimate and growing, is to learn to affirm and appreciate and to speak kindly. Now, women, this is mutual too. It goes both ways. Men want to be affirmed just as well. Don't think they don't. Even if they don't tell you they do, they do. Initiate. Be spontaneous. You know, last year at our anniversary, my wife wrote a card, and One of the things she said that she so appreciated about me was that I initiate the fun things for our family. She loves it that I plan our vacations. She loves it that I call her up on Friday and say, hey, when you come home from work, we're going to go do this. She loves it when I surprise her. Now, I told you a couple weeks ago, I'm not the world's most romantic person, okay? We're not talking about being, you know, the Don Juan every day. But finding ways to be spontaneous and creating some fun experiences and some surprising experiences. In other words, guys, bring some spark back into the relationship. It takes effort and thought. In fact, I just want to say, guys, be wild. Be wild in your love. We were born to be wild, right? Now, I'm going to show you this. Okay, now we're going to get to the really X-rated part of Song of Solomon. Look at this guy's wild. He says, how beautiful you are and how pleasing. Oh, love with your delights. Your stature is like that of a palm and your breasts like a cluster of fruit. I said, I will climb the palm tree. I will take hold of the fruit. Yes! May your breast be like the clusters of the vine. And ladies, this is your part. The fragrance of your breath like apples. That means use mouthwash. And your mouth like the best wine. Sometimes I just need to be wild. Climb the palm tree. And look at her response. Come, my lover. Let's go to the countryside. Let's spend the night in the villages. There, I'll give you my love. Let's go for a second honeymoon. Let's get away from this. Let's get away from my friends who are nothing but jerks and the watchmen. And let's get out of town and have some fun. We need to do that. Now, the Song of Songs has a climax, pun intended. It comes in the last chapter. 8 chapters. And this book has been ramping up all the way to the end. And in this 8th chapter, there's an incredible passage where she again verbally recommits herself to a long-term faithful relationship with him, where she will give her love unconditionally. And when we read this, this is not the kind of love that's based on feelings, because feelings come and go. This is a love that's based on a decision. You'll see it very clearly. She makes a decision to be fully committed to him. And what we see in here is she's describing a love that she is giving him that is absolutely undying. It's strong. Nothing can destroy it. Nothing will hurt it. Nothing will damage it because it's a decision that she's made. Take a look at what she says. Place me like a seal on your heart. Like a seal on your arm. I want everyone to know that I am fully committed to you. Make it just so obvious. For love is as strong as death. Its jealousy unyielding as the grave. It burns like blazing fire, like a mighty flame. Many waters cannot quench love. Rivers cannot wash it away. If one were to give all the wealth of his house for love, it would be utterly scorned. It's priceless. What a recommitment that she makes. Courtship, dating, honeymoon, conflict, recommitment. You see it all there in the Song of Songs. Wow. There's a life principle at work here. And I mentioned this briefly last week, and I want to mention it again. The life principle is this, and it's true in marriage, it's true in any situation in life. This translates to any situation. We look forward, not backward. You know what? We've all messed up. Every one of us can look back and see all the things that we did wrong, that we could have done better, and we can live in that. And when we live in all the junk of the past, it brings up shame and guilt and regret. And here's what happens. Here's what happens, for example, for somebody who's in recovery. If they've been, you know, a drug addict or an alcoholic, and that's been for very long, they can look back and they want to recover, they want to stop, and they've actually begun to stop, but then they start looking back and seeing all the junk, and guess what? It makes them feel really bad. The shame just pours over them. And when they feel bad, the only system that they know to deal with the pain is to go back to drinking or taking drugs or whatever, and they're right back in the cycle again because they've looked back. That's why one of the things that recovering alcoholics and drug users and other addictions learn is today is the first day, finish it, of the rest of your life. See, it's not about the past. Satan wants to use the past to destroy us. It's about today. It's about saying, it doesn't matter what happened before. Not, I mean, it doesn't matter in a sense of not concerned for the damage and hurt to people, but I can't fix or change that. But I have control over my decisions today. I can choose to love today. And if I choose to love today, every day, then guess what? I have entered into a lifetime of loving the person. Because I'm going to do it today. And then when tomorrow comes, that's today. I'm going to do it today. And then when that next day comes, I'm going to do it today. My focus is on today, not way out there, not way back. That's what Jesus said. Don't worry about tomorrow. It's got enough troubles of its own. We focus on what we have control over, and that's my decisions for today. Healthy relationships, deepening intimacy in relationships, and great sex, I think, require several things. And they're not easy. First is humility. We never get to the point of having a healthy relationship if we're not willing to be humble. Humble means I'm willing to admit my junk. I got stuff I got to fix. If pride's there, you know, you say it's all her fault, it's all his fault, and you don't take any responsibility for your part of the stuff. It begins with humility. It says, I'm willing to work on my stuff. I'm willing to say I'm sorry. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make this work. And then that leads to the next one. It takes work. Relationships take work. It doesn't just happen. And it takes risk and courage. You know, when there's conflict, it's kind of risky to initiate, to say, hey, I'm sorry, because you don't know how the person's going to respond back to you. It's risky to be vulnerable, and it takes courage to do the right thing. It takes courage to do the right thing over and over, even when for a while it's not responded to or received well. It takes work to do that. I wanted to give two challenges, and if our ushers would prepare for our communion. I appreciate that right now. Thank you for helping us. Two pieces in the challenge. First is this. Be committed to resolving conflicts. And that begins with just expect it to come. It's going to happen. Two, choose to engage, not distance. That's the first natural human reaction when we enter conflict is to distance ourselves. Make it a conscious decision to engage. And there are times when you need to let the pressure cool off. Don't misunderstand me. If you have two skunks going at it, sometimes they need to take a break, let the tail down, let the air clear, and then come back together. But don't let that be a long time. Turtles come out of the shell. The sooner the better. Suck up the pride. Guys, this is really where it all boils down to. We don't reconcile our relationships. We don't heal our relationships. We don't recommit because we let pride get in the way. That's it. You see, pride is all about me. My needs aren't being met. She or he didn't do what I wanted, needed, should do, ought to do. And when we get past that pride thing, we say, what can I do that's what's the best for the other person? And that's critical for this whole process. And then get help. Rarely do any of us work through any long-term conflict without help. I am grateful for the godly women that were in my wife's lives, my wife's life during the times of our conflict. I'm grateful for my friend Dick Alexander. I'm grateful for all of the friends that we've had and all the resources and the counselors and all that have been a part of our life this 26 years. I can't do it alone. I'm not good enough, smart enough. I'm just as human as all of us in this room. We need help. And we need to be, again, drop our pride being willing to get the help to get through the conflict. And then may we commit that our relationships won't just survive for 50 years, but that they would thrive for 50 years. There's a huge difference. How do we go from just surviving in a relationship to thriving? First and foremost is to put our spouse first. We teach this in one of our marriage classes. You know what? You put your spouse before the kids. Now, that doesn't mean neglect the kids. Some of you are going, yes. Take them, Mom. I'm giving the kids to you. No, that's not what it means. I mean, we have a responsibility in parenting. But you know what? Our kids benefit the most when the marriage relationship is really healthy. That's why that relationship has to come first. Putting our spouse before ahead of our work, our hobbies, whatever it is. That's critical to having a relationship thrive. And then learn, we talked about this, right? Learn to surprise each other. Work at surprising each other in a good way, not a bad way. Honey, I just spent $20,000. Now, that's not a good surprise. The good surprise is when you're spending time with each other and remembering each other and honoring each other and affirming each other. Do that daily. You know, guys, again, let me speak to guys. Guys, we like projects. Okay? Relationships, we're not so good at. Projects, we're much better at. So here's the project. It's a project for a relationship. See? Tricky. Once a day, honor your spouse. If you can do it more than once a day, great, but start with the simple. Learn to honor your spouse once a day. Find a way to do that. Verbally, non-verbally, doesn't matter. Take trips to the village. Remember, she said, let's go to the villages. Get out of town. Do some fun things together. Make it a priority to do that. I make it a priority with my wife to get away without the kids. Of course, we have adult kids, so it's a little easier. Date night. Every week, my wife and I have a date night. You know, it's rarely interrupted. Now, date night isn't always expensive. Sometimes we'll just go to a park, we'll take a drive. Sometimes we'll go to dinner. Sometimes we'll just go to Starbucks and have coffee. It doesn't have to be anything fancy, but it's a time that's devoted to each other each week. It's not the only time we talk during the week, hopefully, but it's an important part of each week. And learn together. There are all kinds of ways that we can grow in our relationships. Books on our website, there's all kinds of books that we've made references to and many others that we couldn't even put on there. Seminars all the time. There are seminars here in Tucson. And next week we'll have our new Pathway Handbook coming out, and there'll be all these new marriage and parenting classes in there and classes for your own personal healing and growth. There's a whole section for caring ministry in there. So do the work all through the year of learning to grow together so that you don't get in the ruts. You've got the tools to face the conflict when they come. Here's how I want to lead into communion. This week as I was in one of my quiet times, I was thinking and praying about the message, and all of a sudden it hit me. I thought, you know, this life cycle of relationships, we've said that conflict is inevitable. And I got to thinking, and I was talking to God about this. I said, is conflict with you inevitable? Because you're a relationship. What do you think the answer to that is? Yes. It's inevitable that we have conflict with any relationship. You see, because all of us are humans, we all have junk in our lives. There's brokenness there. And there are times we expect God to be this way, and he doesn't come through the way we expected, and we're disillusioned and frustrated. It's conflict. Sometimes Jesus asks things of us that we're not very comfortable with. He wants me to do or be something or somebody that I'm not ready to be or to do. That's conflict. I love what C.S. Lewis does in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which is one of the books of the Chronicles of Narnia. In there, there's a conversation. Jill encounters the lion, and in the Chronicles of Narnia, the lion is the Jesus figure. And she's thirsty. She is so thirsty. And there's a lion that's blocking her way to the water. So she's driven by the need to get water, but she's afraid of this lion. And I'm going to talk about this more in my e-news this week. So if you haven't subscribed, I encourage you to do that. But in there, she has a discussion with the professor. And she's basically saying, is he safe? Is it safe for me to go there and drink with the lion there? And his response is incredible. What he says is this: he is not safe, but he is good. If you've seen the movie, that line is in the movie as well. Jesus is not safe, but he is good. He challenges us to live in ways that are not easy. He surprises us sometimes in ways we would never expect, but he is always good. He never seeks our harm. He never wants to hurt us, but he's not safe. And sometimes that's a rough relationship. Jesus promised never to remove conflict in our lives, but he promised to be with us. He made that promise. All the way through the Bible, that's what we see. We see human beings having conflict with God. That's okay, because he's good in the midst of all of that. Now, what I love about doing communion every week is this is a time to get honest with God. Maybe you felt some conflict with God this week and you distanced yourself from him, just like we do in human relationships. This is a time to recommit. This is a time around the cup and the bread we say, you know what? I've been a you know what this week, God. I'm sorry. Let's start over. I'm recommitting to you. I love you. Thank you for faithfully, consistently loving me. This is a time to reestablish, reconfirm, recommit in our relationship. Let's pray. God, thank you. Thank you for sending Jesus. Jesus, thank you. Thank you for doing everything you could for us and continue to. Thank you for loving us when we're not so lovely. Thank you for being here in this very moment, wanting to recommit and reestablish a relationship. God, forgive us for the times that we've distanced ourselves from you. Forgive us for the times when we've become so focused on our stuff that we've neglected you. We want to be deeply in love with you, and we want to start today, this moment, in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you for listening. Please join us each Saturday at 5:30 p.m. or on Sunday morning at 9 and 11 a.m. Check us out on the web at www.pantanochristian.org. For more information, please call us at 298-5395, Monday through Friday, between the hours of 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Once again, thank you very much, and be blessed.